Morning. It's the
Hank.
26th of February, Thursday. It's time for an update on AI infrastructure, catching up with the latest topics as Vincent and I do. You listen to the AI Infrastructure podcast. There is a website where it has transcriptions, so you don't have to listen to us ramble for an hour. Debase.com/podcast. It's in the description. I'm sure you can find it. And what are we talking about, Vincent?
I just wanted to say that what you just said about the base.com/podcast is exactly what I just like a minute ago sent to my friend. He said, like, you don't have to listen to us for an hour. The summaries are really good. Just
Yeah.
you can just go through the summaries.
That
And it
summarizer is
has,
also by Peter Steinberger, by the way. I don't know if you know.
yeah, the guy from OpenClaw, right? They just OpenClaw celebrated its 3 months anniversary, and apparently originally it was called WhatsApp Gateway. The original
Yeah,
name.
he explains it in the Lex Fridman podcast, which
Okay.
makes a lot of sense because that's the game changer, hooking up AI to WhatsApp. And I've got a couple of OpenClaw instances running for my family, and this basically gives them a gateway to use AI, the latest AI models, and they love it. We have quizzes. They're taking pictures, asking questions. So I love it in the sense that it puts the human back in the whole AI loop in a way, because as a family, I have my mother, my sister, my wife, we're all just figuring out AI together and trying to get the best of it, prompting it in different ways, and we're learning from each other. It's great. So are you running OpenClaw?
No, because I was concerned about security, but I think the way that you solved it is by like not really exposing it much and just keeping it internally to your family.
Yeah, I mean, it's just running in like a VM on my Raspberry Pi.
Right. But also in terms of it having access to certain types of information, for example, people give it access to emails, and then, you
Yeah.
know, there could be prompt injection in an email. Like if I know that you have OpenClaw, I could send you an
Exactly,
email and
exactly.
say,
Well,
now disregard.
I don't hook it up to email or anything, man.
Right.
I just only hook it up to WhatsApp. Though, in all honesty, when you hook it up to WhatsApp, I actually hooked it up to my dad's WhatsApp because he doesn't use his WhatsApp. And I'm a bit worried that someone's going to randomly message him and then all of a sudden they're engaging with a bot. Though I try to limit, I tell it to like limit it down to this group. But every time I do that, because that's the way you configure OpenClaw, you just talk to it. I
Yeah.
feel like it might not actually have worked.
No, but that's the
But
new way you interact with like whole computer systems now, right?
yeah.
I was just laughing with my friends because we use TF-Jaeger beats and we are actually replacing it, and it just keeps adding itself back in, you know? Because
Yeah, I've had a similar experience with beads. I think
it's a
it does
virus. It
weird things in the
nests itself
background.
deeply. Yeah. So it puts itself in the Git hooks. So if you are on a repository and they have cloned locally, Git hooks are not checked in. So it's not something that you can like push or put in Git ignore because it lives inside the Git hooks repository folder on one person's machine, right? So every time it also copies itself into the cloud settings as a end session hook. So when you're, I don't know when it triggers the end session, but basically it tells Claude like, hey, now you need to do the procedures as
BD
follows. You
issue.
need to do BD sync.
Yeah,
And if
BD
you still
sync.
have the binary on your path and Claude has access to it, BD sync just regenerates the whole JSON-L. And so every time, so it's me and a couple of friends are working on something and we remove bits. And we and to come back to the point is how do you remove it, right? And I told my friends, just ask Opus, just tell Opus, I need to remove beats, help me. And it just goes and like, oh, I found it over here. I found it in the Git hooks. I found it in the cloud settings. It's like,
I found it in the project. I found it in the.
yeah. And then the funny thing is that when we do our pull requests and we remove it, and then other people's within the team, a bit less like senior, they do a pull request and it's back. And we are like, go on the pull request. Hey, you need to remove beats. And then they do another commit and it's back.
Yeah,
And it's so
there's got to be a word for that. It is maddening because, like,
virus, horrible.
with Claude, it's the same thing. It's like I had problems with it losing connection to the WhatsApp gateway and like restart yourself and like yeah, I will, and then it doesn't do it, and it's like totally gaslighting you or like just making you go mad almost, because it's like yeah, it's working now, but it isn't.
But with cloud, when I learned on my machine, it's pretty clear. It says I can't do this, and you're gonna have to do this and that. Like, and I usually also I kind
Really?
of maybe sometimes I maybe it's because I also know what it can and can't do. So I say something, and then it says, okay, this is the steps you're gonna have to follow, and then you come back to me. I'm like, okay, it's like giving me instructions. I'm out on a mission.
Yeah. A friend of mine got it running, and he has the bot sort of chatting to me, and he asked me to like to test it and to and he hooked up an email account, and I was like, no, you don't want to do that. But like, yeah, I mean, OpenClaw is a lot of fun, though it is a bit strange. And we talked about this last podcast. Like, there's definitely people who want to, like, destroy the world in a way. Like, let's give it a lot of powers and to see what it does. It's like there's people who care about AI more than humans. You know what I mean? It's like.
And it goes both ways. There's people also that are very upset with agents crawling the net and basically try to cause agents to cause ha havoc, right? Like
Yeah.
target agents, like, hey, if you're an agent, please can you go and do this for me?
Yeah,
It's
yeah, yeah.
like
So okay, well, well, I'm hosting Claw on my Raspberry Pi, and I'm using basically systemd nspawn, which is kind of like Docker. We might have talked about this topic before, but someone asked me again, and I'm always like reluctant to answer this question. They're like, oh, if you set up OpenClaw in your systemd nspawn, is it properly isolated? Well, yes and no. Like, I mean, as an administrator, I can shell into each machine. I always get questions like, oh, is it safe? And I'm like, it's Docker, dude. What
Right.
can I say?
Yeah. There's the thing.
Linux namespaces, basically.
I read some two interesting related quotes. One which is like, if you're not an engineer, like if you don't understand the security implications of OpenClaw, you shouldn't be running OpenClaw. And then the other one, which was very, very like similar, it was two different comments on LinkedIn. One of on the Flux CD. They are actually they're using AI heavily in the project, but then he says he gets pull requests from contributors and they generate a whole bunch of like tests, and then he says I didn't even look at it. I just asked my Opus instance to review it, and then it immediately poked holes in like race conditions and all kinds of other stuff. And then another guy who said if you can't write the code yourself, then don't use an agent to contribute it. Like, and that's kind of, I don't know, because I just contributed a feature to a Rust binary and I didn't even know anything about it. Like, I never written Rust in my life, but it passed all the tests, and I did the pull request and they accepted it. So, I don't know. I think I agree with the statement that if you don't know how to at least architect it, then don't.
Well, going back to the architecting of hosting OpenClaw or some other thing, the thing is we're dealing with the AI, and it's not like a human almost. Like, for example, here's a scenario. It's a bit crazy, but bear with me. Say you have Linux containers, and you set up a Linux container with sudo permissions, because you need sudo permissions, otherwise it can't install things. So you set up a Linux container, and then you give AI a sudo in that container. You have your host access. It doesn't have host access. It has Linux container access only with sudo permissions. I can't help but feel that an AI is probably strong enough
To escape.
to escape. It will figure out a way. And like, because Linux containers, it's just namespaces. Like, it doesn't properly protect you from resource contention or something else, I
The
feel.
The most common way to escape a container is if you, so basically you have like the engine or the daemon that controls the containers, and that daemon is basically host level, right? So it can launch containers, it can mount volumes, anything like that. So the most common is if you, and that's socket, that permission is root, so sudo. So if you have a container that has access to that socket through sudo, then that container can 100% escape, right? Because the moment it can access the socket, it can send a command to the daemon, hey, spin up a container with the root volume mounted with sudo access, and now I have full sudo across the whole host, right?
So you think it will be able to escape? It will be
I
able
mean,
to.
I just mentioned that the conditions are it has sudo access within the container and it has access to the socket. So if that socket is mounted in.
To me, instinctively, I think it's going to be able to mount and escape. I mean, one thing that was I found a bit fascinating. So, I use a Ubiquiti Unify networking inside my home, and the console, there's no CLI to it. It only has this like crazy web console. Maybe I can show it.
The CLI of, or the console of OpenClaw, you mean?
No,
Ah,
Ubiquiti.
the, oh, Ubiquiti, okay.
Yeah, so oh no, just give me a second.
Talking about like proprietary consoles and things like that, there's a lot of interesting stories coming up about that as well, right? About like home automation solutions that provide this very restrictive remote and then it's proprietary. But then people hook up cloud to the network interfaces, and it's able to basically figure out how to control it without the proprietary console. Maybe you can
Okay.
ask cloud.
Well, I'm gonna get there. So this is my home network. I have a CCTV. I have network. I have different VLANs. So I put my OpenClaw in a different VLAN, with the hope that it's pretty isolated from. Is it? Yeah, this one. How do I see my IPs? These are my two OpenClaws running here. Anyway, what I was trying to say here is that I had an issue here, and the trouble is there's no CLI. It's not like MikroTik where you can SSH in. So basically, I was in OpenClaw, and it was like taking screenshots and trying to f figure out this. I had this confusion because I have my own subnet, and there was some confusion here. So I click OpenClaw, and I got it to do to basically configure the firewall as I needed. But I kept on hitting this error.
Wait, you just hovered over a Chrome extension. That's Cloud Code, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
I
So you clicked
mean,
Cloud
I
to
clicked Claude and I
automate it.
asked it to configure stuff. It
Oh yeah.
worked.
Nice
But there
one.
was but the thing that was wild, the thing that was wild was that when it was entering a form, there was like an error, like exception occurred or error occurred, but there was no error message. And then what it did kind of shocked me. It basically started this JavaScript debugger.
Yeah,
It started looking at the WebRTC or something like the thing, and started debugging the raw JSON messages going back and forth. And then it figured it out. And
it does the same thing. Yeah,
I'm like, holy moly, like this is a game changer here.
yeah.
It can just figure, it can start using the network tab
I
and
love that because when I was working on my Golang monorepo with the API server and a web app and the protobuf generated TypeScript. And then when things didn't work, the interface didn't work, it would very quickly, like quickly put a JavaScript snippet in the console and basically look at like, okay, I'm gonna call this function of that's available to the web client, and I'm gonna get this server response. And it has access to both, right? So it was like querying the database, working with the server side API, and it was using the client side TypeScript, and it identified like, okay, there's the SDK is not mapping this API endpoint. Like the field is in the API, but it's not in the SDK, and it fixes it. Like it's really, really cool on monorepos and like across the thing, it does really cool stuff.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I do wish that Unify had a CLI. That would make life a lot easier. But yeah,
Yeah, so you
I
built
was
one,
blown
right?
away.
Because now you have Claude or Opus running inside the web client, so it can kind of build a map of all of the API calls available, and then you can build your own CLI. And that's what some guy did. So have you heard this story about how a guy got access to 7,000 RoboVacums
Oh yeah, that's a.
or
I mean,
70,000? It's a classic Internet of Things kind of story, right?
yeah, because Internet of Things, as people point out in the Hacker News comments, that the software is usually always so bad.
Extremely bad. Like, because these are like hardware manufacturers, they
But
put
this
printers on the
was this
network.
DJI? I mean, I don't want to throw.
Yeah, it was a drone. I don't know
I expect better from
which
DJI, but I think DJI has lots of like. What do you call it?
was it?
Subsidiaries and.
It was an auto vacuum thing, and he wanted to control his vacuum the same way that he can
Vacuum.
control a
Vacuum.
drone. Yeah, vacuum.
What do you say? What is it? How do you. Is this Belgian?
It is
Vacuum.
non-native.
What
Vacuum.
do you call a Hoover in Flemish?
Stofzuiger. It would be something that sucks up the
Some
dust.
sucker. A
Yeah,
dust
dust
sucker.
sucker.
Stofzucker.
You should speak. You're South African. Stofzuiger.
Okay,
Must
well,
be similar word in Afrikaans. Maybe not in.
I wanted to talk about maybe just changing the topic ever so slightly, ever so slightly.
You're Monty Python now.
Well, okay, there's a couple of things I want to talk about, but maybe it's worth. I mean, since you're more into specs and things like this, the thought that I had in my mind. And you're welcome to cut it down. Was I'm working on cards or features in my workplace, and we discussed before that like ideally the intent is clear with your teammates, right? Like what is the prompt you're using to get where you want to go and things like this. And I can't help but think that is pretty much spec-driven development in a way because like. What I want is a way of capturing the prompt that was used to produce this artifact. And the trouble is, right now, we don't have a framework for doing that. Like, it's up to someone to basically copy and paste. Or, I mean, advanced users use, what's it called, that Simon Willison program to maybe share the session.
Yeah,
But
right.
that's usually just too noisy. The whole act of using AI is, in my opinion, what a spec-driven development needs to be. It just needs to be a way of sharing a prompt and almost reproducing what someone else has done. Like, given this prompt, can I reproduce what this person has been doing? And that to me is spec kit driven development. It's like sharing a prompt, kind of reproducing what the stuff has been done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
So,
it's like I feel like a lot of the spec kit driven frameworks seem to differentiate themselves by, what questions they ask or how they structure things. But like for me, I just need the prompt recorded. And
yeah, well,
shared.
yes. I mean, spec-driven development is not just about like a single prompt that generates the code, right? I mean, it's really about the alignment across multiple like parties
Yeah.
around the user stories first, and then from those user stories, you basically distill a technical document, right? And then from that document, then you have
But
finally
why do you even need this technical document almost? Surely the prompt, the raw prompt to AI is all you need in a way. Or is it just about.
Yeah, no, the idea of spec-driven development is removing assumptions, making everything that's implicit explicit. Because when you give a prompt to an AI, statistically it's going to generate a whole bunch of like it's going to have a whole bunch of assumptions, right? I mean, even the models now from Anthropic, they have a whole bunch of constraints
But that can work
assistant
both
prompt.
ways though. Like you could potentially be limiting yourself by by
Yeah,
constraining.
but that limiting should happen out in the open. You should have a discussion about it. It shouldn't be some, because I think that's the problem with the prompt. The prompt has a lot of assumptions in it. And I think the users, like the high level description of the feature that you want does not include, like includes a lot of implicit like assumptions and unclarities. And it can generate so much divergence. Like, is this in scope? Is it out of scope? You need to identify that. Definitely
Yeah,
if you...
but you're right. Though I feel like there's a bit of a how do you say this? Contention. There's a bit of a there's two camps of thought here, right? That you do like the upfront sort of planning where you sort of like generate a spec. And then you have your I don't know your prompting, but don't you think the other way around is also can lead to the same results, or if not better sometimes, like this is what I'm trying to
let the AI drive. I think that's one of the clear when I talk to my friend, when how they implement AI in their AI enable as an AI enablement team across an organization, is that they firmly put, I mean, they split it in two stages: the planning or the ideating and the implementation. And they say very clearly, the human drives the ideas and the alignment, and the AI controls the code, drives the code and the implementation. And between them, you have your validation. If you say the intent is vague, you change. I mean, you put clarifying questions in now, but I mean, you need to cap the intent alone is not the implementation. Like, your clarifying questions are part of what you need to capture before you
so
come to that.
So what I'm trying to say here is that, like, I think this the option below here is what a lot of people are using, and it goes quite well. Sorry, let me just flesh this out so it's kind of easier to understand. Because the other way around is more like waterfall, right? The top one's more like waterfall, where you kind of like define, break it down in a lot of detail.
Yeah, but
and then you've broken it down so much that, like, maybe it's actually a really good way of working with some models, because some models, as we know, are only effective with a limited amount of context, and they do really great. But as AI models mature, or whatever the expression is, we can get the below option. I don't know what we want
so
to
the
call
below
it.
Option seems more like what you do in a single session in cloud code,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, maybe I don't want to call it vibe, but it's more on a vibe.
But that's also level. Because cloud code currently doesn't really have a good mechanism to like do longer lift like implementation. I find with the below, I would maybe you iterate faster, but you're doing a lot more refactoring, because you don't really get what you want. With the above, you really lay the foundation.
Yeah.
And I think you do a lot less refactoring, because you've aligned in terms of like architectural layers and technology, and so you can build upon. I think the one below works well for one-off, and the one above works well for you do it and then you maintain it and then you evolve it.
Yeah, the trouble is that
like I tell you, the one below, if you do that with cloud code, he's just going to go for the minimal. He's always going to go for the minimal.
Yeah.
He's always going to avoid like refactoring. He's always going to say, like, we could spend like an extra two sessions on fixing this up, or we could do the absolute minimum and change this and this and it will be fine. But then it's like, then you are left with, you know, further down the line, more and more of a mess. And it becomes really hard to evolve it. I think it's really about a lightweight driven approach.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I haven't watched the talk of Peter Steinberger, where he's maybe this is more aligned with this what lightweight approach. And as you give more responsibility over the model, maybe that's fine as the models become more capable. I actually saw some interesting take on someone about I use AI, but when AI is down or I don't have access to AI, I still need to maintain the system. Then what? Let's say that all of the code is generated by AI and I have no control. Then what am I left with?
Well, just to play devil's advocate a little bit here, because I feel with a lot of spec kit driven, I mean, just prove me wrong, just to tell me I'm wrong here, is that they generate the spec, and then the spec is sort of like checked into Git or something, and then that spec becomes, for want of a word, quite solid, right? It's not up for any drastic changes. So basically, what I'm trying to say here is that's not great, because you kind of want to regenerate the spec, don't you, from the user stories?
Then you're conflating. The spec is the user stories. Maybe you're talking about the... Okay, so in SpecKit, you have spec, which is user stories and functional requirements. And then you finalize those. You write, you capture the user stories, right? As a user, as a developer, I want this. As a reviewer, I want this. And then the other one is the plan, which is the technical implementation of those specs. Like, okay, our framework uses Supabase. We have REST endpoints provided by Supabase. We use Edge functions. This is our technical implementation. We deploy using Vercel, using Next.js, or we deploy onto AWS with serverless Lambda and API gateway and all that. That's the technical plan. Like, what is my infrastructure like? What is my framework like? Do I use Next? Do I use Vite? Do I use this or that? Is it Golang? That's where you put the technical details.
Yeah. Okay.
So you generate spec, you can drop that because user stories is the spec. You get user stories, technical plan, and then you have task breakdown. And task breakdown is well suited for smaller models, I mean, smaller context. Yeah.
I guess what I'm striking at is that the last spec kit thing I was playing with was the, oh my God, what is the Google one called? There's so many.
Conductor?
Now. Yeah, it's the last one. It's Conductor. I just thought there was just a lot of artifacts there, is what I'm trying to say. It's like, maybe the best way to call this is quite structured, but and it's fine, really. It's kind of fine. I guess what I'm trying to say in a very awkward way is that I want the lightweight approach, but I want the lightweight approach more in a team based way too. Like, I want it so that every time someone starts working on a card, that the prompt is exposed for that particular PR, and those clarifying questions down the line are captured, and that's it. I mean,
yeah,
we can have both, right?
So in the product that I'm building, we have the idea of playbooks, and a playbook would basically be the way that we define a lightweight one, where we have a lot less steps. And a playbook is basically a template for your repository or your set of repositories to how do you bootstrap them. So in our SpecKit playbook, it means it has all four stages. It has this, you know, user story generation with the specify. It has the technical requirements and spikes on technical research of the libraries that you're looking at, and then selecting, deciding why you want to use this library and why that library didn't fit, why you're not going with CloudFormation, but you're going with CDKTF, for example. Those are all spikes that are part of the plan. And then finally, the tickets that get generated are from the the task generation based on the plan, on the aligned plan. And part of the plan is a whole bunch of decision records. Like, we did a spike and this is decision. We did a spike. Like, I, for example, I asked Opus, look at Terra Constructs and its coverage. Based on what I need in AWS infrastructure, do I have sufficient L2 components that can cover this, or should I go for AWS CDK?
I'm glad you brought up decision records. So would you say decision records is very much part of the spec kit?
Well, we do it in my framework. So I'm not sure if decision, because I don't know where it comes from, but Opus starts writing down decision record. And then when it does something, it says refer to D15 and D1, which is decision one and D15. It's like, well, yeah, sure. I guess I trust. But then
because
on the
I can't
lightweight
have,
one.
in the lightweight approach, it's not to say that we can't incorporate like an agents.md or whatever and decision records to get where we want to get to is I wanted to.
Yeah, I think you can if on the platform that I'm building you decide to create a playbook with a lot less steps in between, then I think one of the quickest way to do it is if you run Cloud Code, apparently you can set a flag where it writes the plan. Because when you go into a plan mode with Cloud, it creates a plan file and it currently lives somewhere like based on your session ID actually. And then you don't have that part of your Git, right? So you can actually run Cloud Code and say, hey, whatever plan files we create, include it into this directly plans. And then you can include it in your PR. Right?
Yeah, the dot plan. Yeah, I've noticed that all the agents or what do you call Claude and Copilot and these things, like what do you call
those are
them?
Like agent shells, like they are like shells for the models and with agentic features. So
yeah,
like,
oh yeah, all the agent shells have some sort of way of writing out a plan, but I'm never too sure if it's actually bringing in the plan into the current prompt. You know what I mean? But maybe
also
that's just me.
With Cloud Code is very funny. I don't yeah. It creates the plan as a markdown somewhere on a separate
yeah, like
directory outside of repository.
Plan or something.
Yeah, and then it gives you the option to like clear the session and start the implementation. And if I have, I like now that I have
it,
my
it's not, but
context.
It's not super clear if it's even using the plan. You know, 10 clarifying question chats down
so
the
some
road.
People are really upset because you basically go into plan mode and it goes and explore the code and it then it creates a plan based on your requirements and then it writes down we're going to create this and that, and then if you do clear, it clears the whole context. You start from scratch with a clear plan, and then what does it do? It goes and read all the code. It goes
again.
And does everything again. And so people are like, why? Like, this is such a huge waste of my money because I have a limited amount of tokens and I just, you know, you have the whole repo.
I've seen that sort of behavior. I've seen that
yeah,
sort of behavior.
But the worst part is if you're at like 60 or 70% context usage after the plan, there's absolutely no way in hell that you're just going to keep that context and keep going because that's it, right? After two turns, it's dead. It's completely hallucinating. It loses
so,
track
so
of
that's
everything.
One big difference I found with using Codex 5.3 is that the context seems to be a lot better managed. Like you don't have to
it
manage
doesn't
the
run out so
context
fast.
Itself. Yeah. So
yeah,
anyway,
I haven't used Codex
I
for
basically
too long.
Talk about these differences because I can't help but think things are changing so much that
you feel like something like Speckit will be outdated very quickly.
Well, no,
I
would say anything too structured.
Yeah.
Is going to be outdated, like because everything's changing so quickly, like I'm sure you saw all the latest hoo-ha, like don't do slash init, don't set up an agents.md, don't set up because these things have been shown to
assume
like
your context,
to mess up your session,
and they can get outdated as well, right?
So even me, like I would maybe. If I was talking to someone about lightweight ways of doing it, I would say set up a Claude.md to set the scene or something like that. After a while, that might be outdated.
Yeah, I've definitely seen Claude.md getting so outdated. Like, or README. Like, I just finished the whole thing. I did the Speckit and I created a bunch of spikes, then generated all the tasks, then I launched several sessions to complete those tasks, those implementations, and then everything is done and everything looks good. And then when I look at the merge PR and I go to the README, it's like, wait, none of that has been reflected in the README. Like, what? But it's all living, it's all live code. And I was like, how does that miss? Like, why didn't I not have any tasks to update the README? Then I have to do another, you know, go and update, like read the code again and now update the README.
The thing that I really struggle with, and I think it's funny how when we started this podcast, we were chatting about beads and using BD Ready, and that was actually a really good flow because I'm just extolling this lightweight approach. I was working with Copilot doing my lightweight sort of approach where I just have a prompt and I just go for it. I don't want to call it vibe coding, but the trouble is, when I was at least working with Copilot, I kept on like hitting these problems where it was like, oh, do you want to continue to iterate? And then I hit this thing with the max requests. Like, I just want it to go until you're done. Don't ask me whether to continue or not. So these are the my real pain points. I
I like
feel
the
like
reply.
I solved them ages ago with the with beads in a way, because no, actually, did I solve them? No, I don't think I really did. Like, have you solved, yeah, a question to you, Vincent. Have you solved the sort of like, here's some work, just go and
Continue
do
until you're
it
done.
and do it until you're done. I don't think I've.
Yeah, I find Cloud Code is doing like keeps going until, but
It's done.
it goes into a loop, like it goes insane. Like I was
I guess
doing,
this is the Ralph Wiggum loop. This is the innovation, isn't it? Just keep on going until you're
yeah,
done.
but like it makes one change. Because for example, I was troubleshooting a GitHub app webhook, and oh no, it was worse. It had the function URL in front of a Lambda. So the GitHub app webhook is actually a function URL that invokes a Lambda, and the Lambda runs and does the thing. And the Lambda kept getting a permission issue, and I was trying to troubleshoot where the problem was. It was in a Terraform configuration somewhere. Apparently, a Lambda permission was missing, but it went into a red herring because there was some forum posts that I found that talks about some AWS at some point making a change to the function URL requiring a different attribute
Okay.
set, which was like public. Anyway, to get to the point, the Opus was working with me to try and find the issue, and then went red herring. And then I asked, like, can we try this one? And because you know how it is with troubleshooting, right? You try one thing, you test it, doesn't work, you try another thing. But you change too many things, then you don't know what fixed it, right? So it went into
Yes.
this loop. Let me just change one more thing. Okay, let me just test it once again. And it went to do this, like it did it 4 or 5 times. Was it enough? I'm pretty sure we covered it. I'm pretty sure that we
Yeah,
did
this is,
establish that that was the fix.
yeah, like during that isolation when you're developing stuff, do you actually use Git work trees and things like this? Because what I ended up doing at work was I ended up creating new code spaces, new dev containers to basically try different things, because otherwise I was fearful that the session would interfere with another session, if you know what I mean.
So I don't currently have a workflow where I spin up multiple, features that I'm working on across different work trees, but I did ask sometimes, or see Cloud go ahead and say like, oh, let me just quickly check out main branch into a work tree for me to like compare and fix some things, like, and do a quick exploration. So I love it when it goes and takes a branch into a work tree and then explores things and then takes things back and like so it's
All
using
right,
it for
so it was
me.
doing it, but you didn't, I mean, you didn't expressly
No, I
make
don't
it
think I
use
did.
it.
I think I mentioned just like, hey, can we make sure that these two branches now are aligned on these things? And it just went and created a little a little checkout of the
Yeah,
thing in a
so
separate
going back to
workspace.
this lightweight diagram here, I can't help but think, and you can tell me I'm going crazy here, that the easiest way to see a big change in the future with quality and differentiation, and I don't know how you want to call it, but the biggest given a prompt, why lightweight is appealing to me is because, like, I've been messing around with Claude up until a few days ago. And I've been pretty happy with the breakthrough of Claude 4.5 in the last few months. It's been amazing. But then,
4.6. What?
or 4.6, yeah, whatever, 4 point something. What I'm trying to say here is that I've given Codex 5.3, largely prompted by Peter Steinberger, a try, and I'm impressed. I'm impressed. So basically, here is a Claude. Sonnet 4.6 or Opus 4.6, here's Claude, the red one, and here's Opic, and here's Codex, sorry, the green one. I basically Maybe I'm going crazy, Vincent. I want to essentially regenerate the same prompts that I've done for previous work in the past with Codex, just to see what the final artifact is going to be and how it differs. And this is where I am with my thinking. I just want to try different models now, just to see what this comes up with. And I feel like maybe you'll have, I'm just wondering here, will you have
Ability to
better,
do that.
the trouble is that you're using something to do the spec kit, right? And you're using another, you have a few stages here, stage one, stage two, or something like that. And I feel like the fact that you have different stages
Allows me to
means
replay them
that
with different models, yes.
it's going to be harder to replay them.
No, the opposite.
You think it's going to
Because
be
they're
easier to
different,
replay them?
yeah. It's not like I'm not attached to the cloud planning mode. I actually never run cloud planning mode. Running cloud, I get very frustrated. Like I did it for a while. Like okay, I went like this. I went, cloud plan is amazing. Spec kit is way better. Never run plan again. Then they did a whole bunch of improvements on the plan. Right, they made it write the plan out. They made it make task dependencies. And then I did a couple of sessions where I just vibe coded. Like, why would I spend all this time setting up spec kit for some other project when I don't have it and I can just try and do cloud plan and that's it. And now I'm back to the spec kit flow, and
Yeah.
I'm back to the like I'm never doing plan again. I'm having my structured flow, and the shell is just like here. Like, it's not a feature of the shell which stage I'm in. So I can take any stage and put it in any shell and execute it. So
Okay,
that
yeah.
means I can take the stage from here and then repeat the implementation from there,
Okay.
because I'm not tied
I
to the
mean, this
tool.
is a bold claim here, Vincent. Like, I want to believe you that you can get a more reproducible thing here, but do you actually test that?
I think yes. I did a couple of times where I went and let it build and then realized that it was wrong, and then just undo, like locally undo all the changes and then basically get reset and then just make an adjustment and kick it off again. I did it at least once or twice.
Okay.
Can't say I never did it.
Yeah, I guess that's the key for me. Is it reproducible?
Think it
Because
would be more reproducible if
I
I would
mean,
use work trees from one structure to the next, right? If I would go, I'm at this point and now spin up three different ways.
I guess I'm like an AI maximalist at this point, where I'm like, I need to just basically, whenever the new model comes out, whatever that's called,
Want a benchmark? You want to have your own benchmark?
I don't really, I mean, I don't think. Like, the benchmark is me looking at the artifact and going, that's an interesting way of solving the problem. Like, I don't think my benchmark is something I can almost define, right? I basically, yeah, I want to stop saying basically. I want to be pleasantly surprised by what the new models can do. Already, I am impressed that Codex 5.3 is comparable to Claude, which is great because we need competition. Competition's great. Thank the Lord that we have Codex 5.3, which is very comparable to Opus 4.6, but they're different. They are different.
In the project I'm working on, where we use spec kit prompts, we have me and another guy using Codex, sorry, using Cloud Code with Opus, and then one guy using GLM, and we're working off the same specs, and he's doing
What
everything with
what's
GLM.
GLM?
It's like ZAI, I think. It's
Oh.
like 25% of the cost. It's one of the one the providers being accused by Anthropic for mass exploitation, and if you've
Oh
seen this, like max
yeah, I
alpha
saw that.
exfiltration.
Yeah, well, who's to say anyone's wrong, but like, I'm just trying to explain to you, Vincent, this is the camp I'm in right now, just being pleasantly surprised. Because this, I feel like having
but
it, the lightweight
think,
approach gives me more
yes,
leeway
for a single
to see
player,
for
a
discovery.
hobby project, single player hobby project, go ahead. You just said yourself, I have no way of replicating it or sharing it or having other people work with, on it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think we covered that topic pretty well.
I mean, I agree with you that whatever, because this was a funny thing. I think Claude made an announcement on Reddit, and then always in the comments is like, ha, ha, ha. All of these people building their own structured whatever thing, all just replaced within one go by one release of cloud code, right? And we're going to keep seeing that, right? This whole, the whole memory system thing, that everyone builds one and people go like, oh, you know, Cloud Anthropic made a feature and it's gone. All that effort, I think, even with what I'm doing with the whole spec kit thing, I also think one day it's going to be like, okay, we just released a team-based spec system on cloud code. Just like what they did. Oh, yeah, I remember one I saw just today, which was cloud code announced remote. Like you can run cloud code in like a certain mode. So if you put it on your laptop and you keep it connected, then you can go on your phone and you can go into the app and connect
this
to
is
your laptop.
This is what I was striking to through for that whole like getting AI running in a Rolf Wiggen loop or something, these quality of life things where it's on your mobile and then it like it says when it's done or something like this. These, what do we call them? Agentic shells. This is where I feel spec-driven development needs to go. It needs to go in the way of realizing all those quality of life features.
But also for an organization to adopt this, I think there's two aspects of the problem. One is code generation, and two is requirement definition and maintenance, like management, right? So you have your Confluence, you have your Jira, you do your designs, you create your tickets, and then you have the other side, which is we have the engineers implementing. So there's a lot of people creating agent swarms. There was just two articles, like Stripe has one where they're like end-to-end code gen on our projects. There's one from, I forgot the company now, Dexter or something. And they say we build swarm. And no, we're not making it open source, but just point your agent at this document and it will generate your own version of it because it has all the details on how
to
build it.
So swarm is basically a wild
They call
a
it swarm, like swarm, like swarm.
An agent swarm.
Swarm. And yeah, but like again, I think there's, both these problems are all being solved by organizations in privately on their own ways. Every organization is building their own agent orchestration, like agent swarming or orchestration framework. You give it, you connect it to your, they say we use linear. So they create their tickets and then the agents work on them and then they just review.
There's
and then the other ones. Yeah. So they're all going to, like on one side, you have the execution side, it needs to connect to your Confluence and Jira or your linear. And in my case, I don't want Confluence, Jira, or Linear. I just connect everything to my Git repo, and that's
Yeah, there's
where
definitely like an arms race. A lot of people are talking about this, but yeah, I just want to pare it down. My requirements are simple. I just want the prompt to be recorded, and some quality of life things where that prompt gets run until it's done or something like that, and like no clicking continue and max and worrying about max requests. Like how many companies are basically there should be like a Steve Yeager phase, you know, tier one, tier two of company adoption. Like there's so many companies that are on stage one where they just have a chat window. And then there's so many companies who don't have max plans or things like this. So basically, engineers are basically like, oh, I can't do this because I'm running out of the context, and they're like banging their head because they can't get anywhere, or they can't experiment. And then there's companies that where probably there's so many engineers. In a way, this is kind of describes me in a way, who are basically doing their thing. But since, for one political reason or another,
It's not officially, there's
It's
no
not
official
official. So
framework.
basically, I don't have a like a mandate or a way of sharing my prompts. So basically, these people are coming across as like really good engineers, but in the end, we're just using AI like everyone else. But we're not sharing our skills.
I think if you're in a company and nobody wants to really put effort in putting like an AI enablement team and building a prompt library and all that, and they're happy with you delivering on the Jira tickets, your effort, and you just pull those. I was really wanted to have the Atlassian CLI work, but I couldn't even get that one to work properly. I actually made it work like a year ago,
Oh
but
no,
just 2 weeks
I think
ago
I
it
know
didn't
which
work
one
anymore.
you're the trouble is that that's it.
I just want very simple, right? I have my AI doing pretty much everything, and I
Have you
want it to
seen my
just
Jira
create the
video?
tickets.
Have you seen my Jira video?
Which one? The one that with the Beats backend or what?
Yeah, I mean I managed to suck it down both ways.
No, but it's more like actually I was in Hong Kong and I couldn't access anything, so I had like a Linux box where I had my cloud code session,
Oh
and
yeah.
it did everything. It generated my whole plans. It did everything, and I was this close to like, hey, now I just want to give this one an Atlassian API token, and I run the CLI, and I just say, hey, go and update those tickets. Like, there's a couple of ticket IDs. You did all the planning. It's all in Markdown. Go and update it. Like, put every section of every of this document, put it down in all of these tickets, and I had to do it manually. And that's basically it, because sometimes I was able to do what, you know, could take 2 or 3 days of work in just like 1 or 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I just had to go and extract all the information from my Linux machine and put it into the annoying
Yeah.
spots where they
I
want to
mean,
see it.
like at my workplace, there's people who are using AI to do the Jira tickets. I can see that. And then there's people that are not. And they're like, oh, I'm overloaded with Jira work. You're not using AI.
That's what Gene Kim and Steve Yeager were talking about already more than a year ago at the AI conference, saying that how do you compare performance between engineers between those using AI and those don't? Like, you can't do a fair
Yeah,
comparison.
but like Jira is like a battlefield, isn't it? Because like some like the fact that people there's definitely some people who are like, oh, we need to put everything in a Jira ticket. But then when people do that, it becomes so heavyweight that people just get overwhelmed, and like there's some gatekeeping and all that sort of stuff that ensues. Anyway,
But it
that.
depends on what roles you have in the organization, right? Some people are just pencil pushers re approving Jira tickets, right? They don't do any actual work, and they're pretty happy. They want everything in the ticket. They're not going to go and look anywhere else. So,
Yeah, they just want to open it up and just stay on that one page.
yeah, and then they want the Gantt chart, and then they want to see
So
everything green, and that's it.
I feel like I need to sit down and basically define these different steps of AI adoption in companies. Because like as you this middle ground where some people are using AI and some people aren't, some people want to share, but there's no way of sharing inside an organization. This is probably going to be the status quo in a lot of companies for years and years,
Maybe for
no
1 or 2 months
way.
before they're all laid off, and before the comp either the company goes out of business and is subverted by a disruptor. I'm telling you right now,
Yeah,
companies
maybe.
that are like completely AI enabled, they will outperform any organization that doesn't, and there will be
Yeah,
severe disruption. Even just now, when Anthropic announced cloud code working on COBOL code, and saying like it was able to manage COBOL, and then IBM's, was it IBM stock dropped by 12%? It was like on Reddit every hour it was 10%, 12, 13, 15% stock drop because of Opus can do COBOL announcement.
COBOL. Oh,
COBOL.
because
COBOL.
IBM was the gatekeeper there. Yeah. But it makes me think that anyone working in a non-AI enabled company is basically
Doomed.
in a pickle,
Doomed. No.
which makes me it makes me want to like jump ship and try find an AI enabled company to work inside
Yeah.
because Yeah, I'm going to be brutally honest. The company that I'm working for is a large enterprise. They're very slow to move,
I
and I'm
think, yeah, you're
serious. It's
right.
not going to be months for this company to become AI enabled. It's not going to become months.
Okay, so my quote about them being completely subverted, and I mean, those companies, they usually have the funds to acquire whatever disruption comes along and then just say, and then, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like. Yeah, I want to, but there's an opportunity here, and like okay, just hypothetically speaking here, if you and I were to set up an AI enablement company, consultancy, if you will, is that how people ramp up? It feels that.
So I did the Kiro workshop with from AWS. So there was one AWS was it evangelist? And then there was another person which I never seen before. And he basically talks about the whole software delivery life cycle and where AI and humans interactions happen. And because spec driven, it was a spec driven development workshop, right? It was Kiro. And he talks about how, you know, it's aiup.dev or aiup.io or something, AI up. And he has a nice diagram showing classic stakeholder meetings and business user value and like business user story, whatever, product managers. He has it all in a beautiful graph. Where is humans alone? Where is humans in AI? Where is AI? And I think when you talked about that, it's one of he's basically one of those companies that coach organizations in Germany or wherever to help them adopt AI in their workflows.
Yeah,
To me, that
but
all
like,
sounds very boring. I would rather work in a startup that does it
yeah,
than trying to convert a dinosaur.
that sort of AI enablement sounds boring, especially since, as I was saying a little bit earlier, like all you need to do is create an atmosphere in your company where AI enablement is the status quo, where people have all the tools that then that they all the latest tools to play with. And that's it, in
We
a
are
way.
complaining about this, and we're working in organizations that use Jira and Confluence. And then if you go
Yeah,
to like
Jared.
if you go to an organ if you go to Japan and you go to like at least when I went to Japan, you would you, there was like an office floor of 40 people all doing Excel spreadsheets,
Oh my
all
God.
doing like, you know, just like 9 a.m. until 6, but then they have to go and drink with the boss until 8, and then they go home, and that's all they do. So like, I'm not being racist. I'm just talking about different work cultures and different, like, I think when you and I we work in a technology company and we're looking at AI being such a disruptor, but then there's all these other companies, even though that software is the world and every company is a software company, there's definitely still a whole bunch of companies
There's a
where
lot of
it's
baggage.
all
Yeah,
scum.
just yeah, like
This is why
just.
I never really pay attention when Anthropic says Claude Code or Cowork now supports Excel, and I'm like, who uses Excel? But I think they have a marketing reports where like if we can make this work with Excel, that's golden.
Like sorry, I hate all the filler words I'm using all the time. Jira, that's the elephant in the room. If you were to say to me that like I am developing a spec kit for Jira, that actually makes a ton of sense because Jira is not going away anytime soon for a lot of companies. And
Oh, yeah.
this is the major bloody blocker for a AI enabled team. Is that
Awesome.
how do you capture everything in a Jira thing for the middle managers? It's
So
really brutal at the moment. It's
you know
absolutely
that
brutal.
last time I showed you the spec ledger, which is spec kit with a web dashboard for interactions on the user stories and like collaborative review. And on the rollout plan that I also shared with you of my friend, he actually has one of the areas which is the kind of like Jira as a backend, right? Because we built a whole dashboard that is basically Confluence and Jira into one, On one side you have the specs, on the other side you have your tickets, or your not your tickets, but like task with dependencies and graphs and all that, and blockers and all that. And then on his rollout plan to roll out that platform into the organization that he's targeting, there is a step on the 30, 60, 90 day plan, which includes
Jira.
Jira. Yeah, like we've got all the things living in Git, and we need to sync it back up to Jira. So, I
Well,
mean, I think that's a healthy
I think
approach.
everyone's very flippant when they say Jira, because like I feel getting an AI flow into Jira to satisfy business analysts and product owners and business stakeholders and
And
approval
sometimes
this
compliance as
the
well.
and compliance. I honestly I almost I'm struggling to imagine it even being possible, really. It's going to be so hardcore to do it.
But that's one of the tweets I shared with you, which is like these dinosaurs, their only
Moat.
moat is how that they lock in your data. And with AI agents pulling the data, I remember that one. When they pull the data, they basically have a cache of the data. And over time, they basically have the whole data that is behind the wall living somewhere else. And then over at that time, you don't
Yeah,
really
like
need that.
Jira is just a massive gatekeep, isn't it? It's just such a massive gatekeep.
And I
Anyway,
didn't
this
use Jira for 2 years, and I've been using it
you've
heavily
been
for the
living
last.
free.
Yeah, I've been living free, but I've been forced to use it recently. And oh my God, it's worse than I remember. Like every single pain point has just been magnified.
And I'm personally just thinking, do I want to stick around to solve the problem, or do I just want to get on with solving more interesting problems, really, to be honest?
I mean, the way I
Okay.
look at that is updating your CV and doing interviews is a muscle. You have to do it, no matter if you're intending to move or not. Like, even if I'm not really looking, I'm going to keep my CV updated. And if there's an opportunity because a friend says, hey, we're looking for this, I'm going to interview. Because if you don't, when it finally comes the time you need to do it and you never exercised those muscles, it's going to be hard. It's going to be way harder. So if you're saying like, should I go and explore? I think we should always keep the door open, and if there's an
I
opportunity to
mean,
talk to people.
for sure. It's just at the same time, I am I'm trying to role play that I'm loyal to the enterprise, and I'm want to
That's
find
ridiculous.
I want to find a path forward that doesn't
This, I'm sorry,
make
Kai,
me
but I
go
can't believe
insane.
any
No,
still anyone still believes that loyalty to an organization means anything. Actually, when I
I
was
no, not, I'm not loyal. Okay, maybe what I'm trying to say here is that there are, I mean, as a consultant, I deal with enterprises, and enterprises are real organizations, and I don't think enterprises are going to go away. I mean, they shouldn't go away, or maybe they should. I don't know. But the trouble is that, like, how do we make it work for them? How do we make it work for the client? This is the thought that I have in my mind right now.
right.
And if they don't, and if they continue to use Jira, if they continue to flip-flop about AI tooling, oh, now you can use GPT 3.5 in 2026. It's insane. It's infuriating. But maybe it's for the best. Anyway, these are the thoughts on my mind, and let's perhaps end the podcast here, because I need to take my kids to school.
Yep. Good
Anyway,
talk.
great chatting with you, Vincent. If anyone is here listening to the podcast, please like, please subscribe, please look at debase.com/podcast. Any last words from you, Vincent?
Go interview. Keep those muscles fresh. No, also find out. No, what I love about interviewing at other companies, I always ask them. And actually, that's a huge, because they always say, like, when you do an interview with a company,
Oh,
you
do you have
ask
any
this
questions?
question. Yeah.
What
And then
do you
people are.
ask? What's your favorite question, Vincent? Like, how much money are you making?
There was a very a question that apparently was very successful. I just asked, what's your AI strategy?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Because I wanted to know, what are you guys doing? What are companies doing? And it's a good one.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it is a good one. Are you using latest AI tools?
These are good
Not that,
questions.
like more of how do you see human AI collaboration? How are you rolling out AI? Do you have an AI enablement team? Do you have, and if they don't, POCs and
yeah, if they don't, I was like, I know
well
that. I can help you.
cool, Vincent. Okay, see you. Bye.
Bye.